Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Strange Days podcast. As always, I'm Billy Blackburn.
Adam Huber. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day, Adam. I hope everybody had a good weekend, enjoying their recreational drugs and their Easter eggs and all that good stuff. We got a good show for you. We can be contacted at Strange Days on Facebook. You can reach us through Twitter, which would probably be the preferred nomenclature, at Strange Pod. That's at Strangepod. We'd really love to hear from you. You know, reach out, give us a heads up. You can put something on there, cool pictures. We will talk about it maybe.
This episode brought to you by UPS. UPS, what can Brown do for you?
Brown can do so much for you, so check them out, everyone. And let's start the show. Happy Earth Day, Adam.
Happy Earth Day, Billy. Sorry we've been away for a little while, guys. It's hard to get together sometimes, but we're going to try to be better about that. But I think we got some cool stuff to talk about today, some local stuff, some international stuff, I don't know.
Some universal truths to be told.
Dispelling lies.
But it is Earth Day, in fact, and we have found that we are consistently 400 million parts per million with the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere these days. It's one of those gases that like retain the heat and have a huge impact on the way we are living our lives and living in this world. It's an interesting milestone to hit this month with being Earth Day and all.
So what is it, like an unsafe level, or is like,
well, it's
I'm
it's
sure situation, it's not good, but
it's a situation where they're trying to put it in the news so to make people more aware, so that when we hit like 420 million parts per million in the atmosphere, that people will be able to remember, wow, it wasn't too long ago that we were just at 400 million.
Uh-huh.
And it's reaching the levels where in the best of times, like I believe it's the springtime and the summer, plants and the plant life is able to process the carbon dioxide back into the breathable oxygen that we need.
Mm-hmm.
But that's even in the best of time. Like those two particular seasons are able to do that more proficiently than, say, winter and fall. But we're reaching these levels where, we're kind of bombarding the system and they're unable to process things back into a more livable atmosphere that we need.
And these levels are maintaining? Like, they're pretty stable. Like, they're not looking like they're going down.
No, they're actually reaching a point where we will consistently be 400 parts per million over. It's a milestone that they're putting out there.
And from what I understand, it's mostly cars.
It's cars, coming from. I imagine the manufacturing process, just like the industry and the way we are, going about producing energy and that sort of thing.
Is it carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide?
It's carbon dioxide.
Okay,
it's the big one.
Because I think monoxide is produced as a byproduct of factory farming, but that's a whole different thing.
Sure.
Why have they waited to put this out now, or did they?
Maybe because it's Earth Day. I mean, it's always something that I've heard since I was very young, that it's a problem in the way we go about things. But perhaps because it is specifically Earth Day, they're trying to put it out there, get the awareness out there, try to get people to make changes in whether it be their day-to-day. The U.S. government's actually getting a lot of criticism for not curbing or going through the process of trying to get manufacturers or businesses to curb their output.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just informational and a convenient day-to-day.
Yeah, so ride your bicycle, go for a walk. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of all that important oxygen, did you hear that they've actually been able to inject oxygen straight into your bloodstream by making this sort of, I believe it's some sort of a byproduct.
Yeah, like, so you can breathe longer underwater or something? Or
well, that's
what
the test
exactly
that they were doing.
Okay.
What it is specifically is scientists developed a new microparticle filled with oxygen. It's a 2 to 4 micrometer of a single layer lipid surrounding a tiny bubble of oxygen gas. And lipid is so small that if it was any bigger, it would actually do damage in your bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like, I imagine, taking some sort of pill or something where, you know, it's just like a carrier system to get it into the bloodstream. And then it dissipates, and then you have the oxygen straight into your bloodstream. What they did first is test on rabbits and, you know, constricting airways. And it seems kind of lame, but... what they're able to find is that they were able to keep rabbits alive for like something crazy, like 15 minutes after constricting their airways.
Jesus.
Right.
And so is this like just a one-time injection that they say, or?
I imagine it's if you were hooked up to some sort of machine. I'm not sure what the delivery method is after that, besides just, you know, what I read in the article about them being able to do this and keep a rabbit alive. I think obviously some I can imagine the applications being underwater and that sort of thing, but it would be a process, like an ongoing process, to almost like, you know, hooking yourself up to an IV and keeping it circulating through your bloodstream.
The thing that occurs to me right away with that is like terraforming, you know, different planets or the moon. And one of the big issues was, you know, how are you going to have a consistent flow of oxygen when there's none to draw from in space? Well, looks like they're on their way, because like you're saying, if you're going to be hooked up to it, you know, inevitably things become wireless.
Well, how long does it take to get to Mars these days? What would the projection be? Because... right now, what I'm thinking is it's a one-way trip for people that, you know, are pretty much saying, you know, we're going to be the pioneers to kind of set something up, even just to make the trip.
Oh, from what I understand, they've got a trip like that in the works. I don't think it's American scientists. I want to say they're like Dutch. I think it's somebody from Europe.
Sort of Northern Europeans, because those Dutch and the Swedes, they got it going on. They figure things out.
Well, but from what I understand is like they know they won't be coming back.
Right.
So, because I don't even know, can we get back? Because we've sent stuff there.
We definitely
but it
have.
Doesn't. We usually leave it.
I don't know if we've sent there have the method to. like leave their atmosphere once it's gotten there, but I'm very ignorant on that subject.
Yeah. From what I heard, it's like you said, it's a one way trip so far. I don't know how they're gonna be breathing or if they're gonna be staying on the ship the whole time.
Right. Well, does it take? What I'm wondering is, you know, when we send things to Mars for any sort of exploratory, you know, situation, is it take the same amount of time what it sent to send like a human there, like the actual method of coming from here to there?
It would seem like it would, because I think once you get up there, like the speed is like irrelevant to your body because there's no gravity to feel the G-forces.
Right. Maybe they'll send Justin Bieber to Mars.
They should send him somewhere.
They're trying to send him back to Canada.
Really?
Yeah, he got arrested recently.
Again?
A DUI without having a valid license. And something like 70,000 people are logging on to the wethepeople.com.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's the petition.
Or, I'm sorry, wethepeople.gov, and they're petitioning to have him deported back to Canada.
He's not a citizen.
They're not at the numbers they need yet,
uh-huh.
And I'm not necessarily thinking that it would actually work, because it's not a violent crime.
Yeah.
To have somebody deported, there's very strict stipulations.
Well, from what I've heard, it's almost impossible to get into Canada as a visitor if you have a DUI.
Yeah. That's probably how he got here. They probably deported him to the U.S.
Yeah.
Right. So they're not at the numbers they need yet, but if you want to support, you can, of course, go to wethepeople.gov, if that's something you're into.
If you're anti-Bieber.
Right. Which I guess I'm, when it comes down to it, I'm pretty open to that sort of thing. But at the same time, you know, I try not to put too much thought into it.
I was reading our, excuse me, our lovely Denver Post.
Sure.
Last week... last Sunday, April 13th. And in the perspective section, which is the opinions, editorials, and things, there was a piece entitled "The Real Dangers of Marijuana Edibles." So I was intrigued because, I mean, especially with them being legal, a lot of people are trying edibles who maybe have smoked marijuana but never eaten it before. And a lot of people know the effects are generally stronger, and I don't know, I guess for a lot of people, longer lasting. I didn't really have a problem with some of the questions that this guy posed, but the way he wrote his article was, given it is an opinion piece, but it didn't strike me as very sound journalism. And this guy originally wrote the article, or he works for ProPublica, which is, if you don't know, it's a nonprofit, sure, independent public interest site.
Okay.
So he starts out talking about how he was at a, he was in town recently, and he went to a Nuggets game, and, you know, said he smelled weed, and he said it reminded him more of when he went and saw AC/DC than a family sporting event. And, you know, I do get that the public consumption is sometime a little
That could be offensive. A tricky thing.
I try to be cognizant of it. You know, don't do that stuff if there's kids around, you know. Like, don't be rude. It's the same thing if I'm smoking a cigarette, right. I'm going to get out of a mom in her stroller's way.
It's just as respectful as, having a couple drinks when you're at a Nuggets game and being belligerent when there's, you know, other people around. If you can contain yourself and, you know, be a respectful human being, I feel like that's what it comes down to.
But, you know, I think he's saying, like, chilling people smoking in the parking lot, yeah. You know. I get that. I get it. He has a little problem with that. But he wasn't, you know, too obnoxious about it. But then he goes on next to say, he's like, I grew up in Colorado, but it's been a while since I've lived there. And then he says, I've never tried pot, but graduated from CU Boulder. And, you know, he talks about how it's famous for its 420 public pot parties. And,
sure.
And he said, but I saw more public pot use in my two-day visit to lower downtown Denver than in years spent in Boulder. And it's like, okay, you know, like you said, you haven't lived in Colorado for a long time. So, sure, you know, things change. And if you haven't lived in Colorado for a long time, I'm guessing it was when marijuana was still illegal for recreational use.
When did they actually do it for medical use? It was like the...
They
it was
were
probably about 2002, 2003.
I believe they were on the forefront. So, with California,
sure,
and them. So, I mean, it has been a decent amount of time. So people are a little more used to it here than in other parts of the country. But
you were telling me about this article. So what happened then?
He just goes on to talk about how, you know, with the new dispensaries and stuff, anyone over 21 can go and buy these baked goods or candies. And then he talks about how he was in town to write about this conference of the Association of Healthcare Journalists.
Sure.
And then he tells this story about at a reception, this woman and a friend passed around gummy bears infused with THC, which is obviously the active ingredient in marijuana.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. And then he goes on to talk about his friend at the conference, and he says, I'll call him the dude because he said I could share his story on the condition that I didn't name him. And he had a bad reaction.
Oh, so this isn't even his story. This is somebody else's story entirely.
Yeah, which is another thing, like, I had a problem with too, you know, and like, this guy says, never tried pot, so he's going off of hearsay, and a lot of people respond to everything differently. Not everybody responds to liquor the same way.
Everybody's heard a story from somebody else where they had a bad experience, you know, doing, whether it be alcohol or any other sort of, you know, quote-unquote recreational drug. And if everybody, you know, anybody has the capability to fear-monger in that way. So that seems kind of irresponsible as far as journalism goes.
Yeah, and I'm fine with him never having tried it, but like you said, to, you know, go ahead and publish an article on a pretty reputable and well-distributed forum, you know, kind of bothers me. But You know, he talks about there's, you know, a running debate whether it should be recreational legal, but, and then the, given that it is, it's attracting new and possibly naive users. And he talks about how the public health system has a desire to have better regulation, but since it's not regulated the way anything else would be because the federal government isn't involved.
Well, that's not unreasonable.
No, it's not, and I agree it should be a little more regulated, but he sort of talks about how there's like almost no regulation on these containers and things, and it got me thinking, so I, you know, went in my backpack and pulled out the thing of gummy candy that I had bought the a few days before I read this article, and I was looking, and they told me when I was in there, without me asking, that these are, you know, how many each little square, how much of a serving that was, and what a normal serving is, and I know what I can handle.
Sure.
But, you know, and it also says it on the package, too.
Because, edibles in particular, which is probably, you know, the idea behind this article, can be a little across, you know, hard to be across the board. It affects people in different ways. You know, somebody's, like, just what you're doing on a particular day, what you had for lunch, if you've been active, it's a hot day. There's a lot of things that can placate the experience for you.
Or, like in this guy's case, the dude had only smoked pot twice in his life, about 25 years ago.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, so he's a professional.
Yeah, he's basically Cheech or Chong.
Sure.
Okay, so he has tried pot. He knows what it's like to be stoned. Yeah, it's been 25 years, but, you know, he's still kind of remember.
Right.
Now, he should also, you know, really be aware of, like, and a lot of people do, it's not, the marijuana is not the same as it was 25 years ago, especially if you're in a state where it's legal. He's obviously visiting, you know,
right?
And, really, and he's art a form, and he's a health, about it. An artisan thing, like, you know, craft brewing, or,
right?
You know, roasting coffee.
Sure.
But and he should know better too, because he's an adult and he's a healthcare journalist.
Right.
Come on, man. So he said, you know, so it was twice in his life about 25 years ago, but got curious. And tried some pot gummy bears from the Lodo Wellness Center. And he said other than in being infused with THC, they looked and tasted like ordinary candy, which is not true. You can taste you can taste the hash oil. I don't know what he's talking about. And he said the dude and a buddy paid $20 for a pack of 10. Okay. He said he ate one gummy bear before dinner but felt nothing. Now, one gummy bear for somebody at his level is a responsible amount to eat.
Sure.
Okay. But felt nothing, so he popped another during the meal. Like, come on, give it a second. Do you, when you take a shot, do you feel it right away? Not really.
Not necessarily. Sure.
No. It's going to come on faster than liquor, but these things have to get into your blood to feel the effects. You know,
right.
He knows this. Like, you don't have to be a scientist to know this kind of stuff. So then he said he popped another one, didn't feel anything. So rip off, he assumed. So he ate a few more, five total. Still felt nothing. Five total?
That's well outside the recommended dosage.
It is outside the recommended dosage, and that would get me pretty lit, and I do this on a regular basis. And so he fell asleep in his hotel room about 11. 2 hours later, woke up feeling like he was on a roller coaster. Lucky. His entire body tingled, and he tried to stand, couldn't. You know, he starts freaking out. He's terrified. He's like, was this a high, an overdose, a heart attack, a stroke? Well, you'd probably be the first person to have a heart attack or a stroke from THC gummy bears, but whatever.
Yeah, but your heart's about to explode. Have you considered trying a cartwheel?
Yeah. So, you know, he's freaking out. Didn't call the ambulance, which is smart. A lot of people do that. And he's like, they can't do anything for you. You're just high. And so he said it lasted about 2 more hours and took him like a whole day to feel normal.
When in reality, it was probably only about 15 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Let me get real.
It was forever, man.
Yeah. A week later.
It was the drugs, man. But, so this, and then now the guy's talking about, hey, this experience got me wondering about, you know, public health aspect of legalization. And he talks about how edibles can cause more unpredictable high, which is, I mean, that's generally true. And then he goes on to say, in the case of the gummy bears, one is considered a single serving.
Right.
So, I mean, he's already admitting his friend is irresponsible. So, and then he's talking about how he spoke to the manager of the place that they got him. And he talks about that she's aware that a lot of people are novices. And you just should start with one 10-milligram gummy bear. That's even small, more than what the ones I bought. The ones right. I bought were about 6.6. So, and then they say one, you know.
Sure.
So it's not like they're not covering their ass or, like, you know, they don't want bad things to happen like this, you know. And if this guy was more responsible, it wouldn't have happened like that. And, you know, she says that, you know, there's listings of, you know, the serving sizes, the amount in the whole container. But, you know, admits there are problems with, you know, potency regulations sure. and stuff. But, he says his buddy, the dude said that his friend held on to the package, so the dude never looked at it. And, right. you know, claims that no one at the shop ever gave him warnings. Well, he could have asked, too, especially he knows how much of a novice he is.
I've never been in one of the recreational weed stores, mm-hmm. the marijuana stores, but so maybe you can tell me. I imagine that everybody working there is just, you know, having a good time, enjoying their afternoon, and would really love to talk to you about some of their product.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you've gone to a liquor store, like, and you're in the beer section, like at Argonaut or something, like, there's guys in there that really love beer, yeah. you know? And, like,
that doesn't seem that far-fetched.
Or you go to the counter even. I was, the other day when I bought something, I had never had it. I was like, have you ever had this before? And he's like, no, blah, 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 da, da, da. Like, you know, just going in and giving me more information than I even ever
right.
wanted, which, you know, not too much, but...
Well, it's a new thing, you know. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, people call it the Colorado experiment, you know, doing a lot of things. It's not something that's new for people. People have been smoking weed and enjoying themselves for a long time. But to have it on this level is, you know, kind of something new. So if I owned some sort of store, anybody walks through the door, I would be, you know, following around, asking if they have any questions, you know, because I acknowledge it can be a sticky subject for a lot of people, and, you know, safety is paramount, really.
Yeah, and some people feel weird going in there, mm-hmm. I understand, because mm-hmm. they still feel like they're buying drugs.
Right.
But every time I've gone in there, you know, like you said, everybody has been very friendly, accommodating. I generally don't ask that many questions,
right.
Or in-depth questions, because I pretty much know the answers, but I've seen people ask questions, get answers, and you can really tell when you go in there. Who knows what they're doing and who is, like, kind of new to this, or, like, you know, there's people maybe around, you know, in their middle age, you know, in their 50s, 60s, who maybe smoked pot, you know, when they were younger, and now that it's legal again, you know, they just couldn't, they didn't know anywhere to get it, so now that it's legal again, they're like, hell yeah, I want to get back into it, but they know, yeah. you know, that it's no joke.
Well, so. You can't argue with the money involved with a situation, you know, it's really what's going to send this off into, you know, something more legit, where, you know, just the taxes alone that they're able to generate, the revenue of the product, you know, it's a great thing. And when people start realizing that, you know, this is a viable product that people are going to be buying anyways, it's why how things got moving in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and it's only a matter of time. You can't argue with the money.
Yeah, and I think when more of that money comes in, these regulations will get better, too. Because it's not like they don't have any, but, you know, if they could have more resources for that, they could, you know, guarantee potency yeah. levels and consistency,
right.
you know.
Consistency is the big one.
Mm-hmm. And they do talk about, you know, there's been cases where children have gotten into edibles. That I don't even understand why he's really bringing that into this article. It really kind of just seems like he threw it in at the end to just as a little another, you know, blow
sure.
against it.
Yeah, it's kind of a little jab.
It is, because that's general irresponsibility. That has nothing to do with marijuana. Like, I don't leave weed edibles out so my cat won't get into them. Like, and if you are careless enough that you're leaving it out, and, like, the bottles are, like, I would call them semi-childproof.
Mm-hmm.
I would say they're somewhere in between just a regular old pop-off pill bottle
right.
and a prescription pill body you'll get now, a kid could probably get into them.
Okay.
So I'm not going to lie about that.
How easy is it for a kid to get into it? And how long did it take you to realize you shouldn't put your marijuana in the same drawer as your ham?
My marijuana usually stays in my backpack anyway. But I was just saying I would never, like, leave, like, a bag out with, like, some candy in it or whatever, because she will eat anything.
Right.
So that to me is just being irresponsible. It's kind of, I don't know. It doesn't, I don't really think, I think that's a separate article if you do want to write about that.
Sure.
So, which, you know, sort of just doesn't, it takes away even more credence from this article, and I take this guy even less seriously.
Yeah. With that said, it is an opinion situation in the perspective pages of the newspaper. So be that as it may.
And then just one last thing that he throws in, like, he was, you know, he said his friend was glad that he was at least in his hotel room when that happened, but, you know, and not in a place where you can endanger others. And then the next sentence is, pot use has contributed to car crashes. Sure, I'm sure it has. I can guarantee it's not as many as alcohol.
Mostly at about 10 miles an hour.
Yeah. And the recent death of a Wyoming college student who jumped from a fourth floor hotel balcony. Now, how do you figure, just because he had marijuana in his system, is he the first person who ever had marijuana in his system when they committed suicide?
You're going to see a lot of this sort of thing happen. But with your the toxicology levels, it can tell us one story if you want it to go one way, or another story if you want it to go another.
Yeah.
Like that guy eating the on bath salts that was eating that dude's face.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't he have marijuana in his system? I think that's the only thing he had in his system. Because they don't test for bath salts, because there is no test for bath salts.
Yeah.
Fucks.
Yeah. So, like, what else did this kid have in his system? And I mean, that's going to be one of the milder things he's going to have in his system. We actually have a test for it.
He was probably on bath salts.
Or maybe he was just fucking depressed, and maybe he was drunk, too. How many people have been drunk and jumped off a building? That just, like, was really, I was, you know, it's towards the end.
It's a cheap shot.
Yeah. And it's towards the end of the article, and the whole time I was kind of like, this guy's not going too much off, like, the deep end or one way or the other. And I got to that, I'm like, okay. Now you want to say that we make people kill themselves. And contributed, like,
or
that
at least
is, like,
put you out of your head to the point where you fall off things.
Yeah. Maybe, like, your bed and when you fall asleep.
Right.
So, I don't know. It's just, it's an interesting time. You know, there's a lot of discourse about these things, but and I'm open to that too, and like, he does make some good points, but it's just like, if you're going to publish this in a major paper, like, it was just a little it didn't seem as professional as the rest of the paper seems.
Right. Can I ask your opinion of something?
Yes.
How do you feel about simulation theory? It keeps me up at night sometimes. And I need to get somebody's input. For those of you that don't know, there's an idea that people toss around, which, you know, has the moniker of simulation theory. It's the idea that your day-to-day, your life, and your perspective is all being generated and has been for God knows how long by some sort of super mega computer that that we are present for in, say, some sort of distant future. So the idea would be, you know, sometime in the future, there's something setting up this entire world for us that seems so real to us that it's, you can't tell the difference between that and the actual reality that you would be living in.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I believe in that shit, but God, wouldn't that be something?
Well, just, you know, weird shit happens sometimes that, like, sort of ties in with that. And then something else that makes me more enticed with tossing around that idea is I don't fully understand this, but they found math equations in the way that the galaxies are made up.
Is it,
do you
like
know
the,
about this?
Like the golden mean?
I'm not sure what it's called.
The golden ratio.
Or it's either, or it's computer code or something.
The God code.
And like they've like kind of found it.
Well, I think the golden number, or I can't recall exactly what it's called. It's the idea of like the like a nautilus shell, and like the ratio as it like opens up in each chamber is like perfectly rationalized outside of it. You can see that in Greek architecture and in sunflowers, like the way seeds are produced in a sunflower. They all follow like this same golden ratio. It's an interesting thing. You see it in nature so often.
And is that what are they called, those shapes?
Trapezoids.
No.
Circles.
Oh Jesus. I can't remember now. Fractals.
Oh, I'm sure that has.
Yeah,
something
I
like
think that.
What exactly is a fractal? For those that don't know.
I don't know. Tell us.
Well, I can tell you the golden ratio. It's actually a number. 1.618033988875. And it's you see it in nature, and like I said, a lot of Greek architecture, paintings.
Well, like perception of beauty,
yeah,
right?
It's definitely, you know, something you can see, and you know, if it's not something you recognize right away, it's funny when you find out that it is found in something that you happen to be looking at. But yeah, just, I mean, the idea of that is kind of perpetuates this whole idea of the simulation theory.
Right, that it's constructed because
right.
It's just too mathematically sound.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at first glance, you look into, it's at night, you look into the stars, it just
right.
looks like a hodgepodge of infinity.
Sure.
But
we're told it's all these other things.
Yeah.
So then you start to, you know, not consider that it's just, you know, this whole spanning blanket over us or something like that. Because what do I really know? I think going on that idea, when we enjoy a beverage, you know, an alcoholic beverage, I feel like that might kind of disturb the system a little bit and kind of send ripples across it. And then your perspective of your reality starts getting altered in these different ways. The same way maybe a coffee would stimulate the experience a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting. And then I guess that would make the millionaires that are living that really super dope life, they get unlock some sort of god mode in the system, I think. Yeah.
It sounds like a silly concept, and it's really, really complicated, but then at first glance it seems silly.
I guess it is really silly, but at the same time you can't really, you know, prove that it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, this a theory, and it's interesting to talk about. So if you guys have any opinion on simulation theory, you can reach us at Strange Days on our Facebook page. Our Twitter is at Strange Pod. That's at STRANGEPOD. So reach out. Let us know if you have anything you want us to maybe go over or discuss. We'd love to hear from you. And I think that'll do it.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.